You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinions of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today is part two of yesterday's show, and this will probably be a 30 to 40 minute show, so I'm just kind of alerting you. And I just finished editing the last show, and I have included for now the new closing music, and it's part of America the Beautiful. I have a 30 second spot, so I wanted you to at least know what I've added in terms of the music. Most of you will know the music, because most Americans do know American the Beautiful. And I think it was just a more appropriate ending. And I sort of like it, but I'm going to really, like I said last time, I'm working on a video project that will use both Premiere Pro and After Effects. And the underlying music will be America the Beautiful, but I'll be talking over that. And you'll probably see that in probably 60 days, maybe 70 days, another 10 weeks, because it's going to take a little time to put together. Yesterday, I gave a lot of background, and that's the way I would talk about it, in terms of people's choices. People like to choose what they want to both buy and who they want to buy from. It's called consumer sovereignty. And that's the key, really, to the American system. The combination of free enterprise capitalism, where you have businesses competing for your business. And they're motivated to serve the needs and wants of the American people by providing them both good service, quality service, at an affordable price. Notice I didn't say the lowest price. There's some places where you can go and get the lowest price, but you get what you pay for. So the American citizen, the American consumer, is really in the best position to decide, given his budget and resources, what's best for him and what he wants and what he needs. And that includes any good and services, including health care. The focus has been on health insurance, but the scandal that's really developing again is in the Veterans Administration. And there's two really parts to this. One, you have a large influx of younger veterans that served in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places across the world. Many of them have disabilities. And they turn to the Veterans Administration to get access to health care. And the problem is, because of the sheer numbers, there's been large backlogs of first just getting in the system. And I was kind of curious. I'm a veteran, and like I gave my own background. I'm not going to go into it. But I've never really used the veteran administration at all for any benefits, absolutely no benefits. And that was my choice. I really didn't need them. I didn't take advantage of them, but that was my choice. And that's probably a lot of veterans. Because when they leave the military, they usually start another career. Many of them are successful at it. And they don't need to avail themselves of veterans benefits, whether it's educational benefits or the services of a hospital or doctor in the Veterans Administration system. And you got to remember, the Veterans Administration has, I think it's over 1,800 different facilities. About 187 of them are hospitals. They have several hundred, I think over 800 clinics. But they have a lot of facilities that veterans can go to across the country. And if you go to the Veterans Administration site, which I did yesterday, I was kind of curious, you'll see they have a map. It's an interactive map, and you can press whatever state you're on, and you can get a listing of the various veteran or VA, I'll use VA from here on out, where they have hospitals, where they have clinics, and also you can fill out the paperwork online if you want. And I was kind of curious. I did not fill out any paperwork, but I did go to the page that I could have filled it out. And what struck me is they're asking a lot of information. Now, some of it I understand. You need to know my name, my address, my phone number, when I was in the service, what branch of the service. But then they started to ask a lot of income information. And I know why they're doing that, because really the VA serves primarily veterans that cannot afford medical treatment. In other words, the way I think of the VA is very much what people think of Medicaid. And Medicaid is a program that serves the needs of the poor, the indigent poor. And it's not a very good program for the simple reason, and it's this is another scandal that eventually will pop. And the problem is, you can apply for Medicaid just like you can apply for your VA benefits, and you have to meet certain requirements, income requirements. And if you're earning more money, you're not going to qualify. So it's for the poor. It's for the needy. And then you can say, I have Medicaid. What's the problem, ladies and gentlemen? The problem is, go find a doctor. Go find a specialist that will treat you. It's not that the doctors or the specialists are mean people. It's just simply the federal government, as the payer for Medicaid, as they are the payer for Veterans Administration, simply do not reimburse the doctors their usual and customary charges. And many doctors and many specialists simply lose money when they treat Medicaid patients. So they make a decision that they will not do that. Because in any profession, especially if you're in self-employed, there are just so many hours in a day, a week, a month, or year to work. And most doctors work a minimum of 2,000. Most work 3,000 to 4,000 hours a year. Now, if you work 40 hours a year for 50 weeks, that's 2,000 hours. So many doctors work more than that. Some choose just to work 2,000, some even less if they're approaching retirement and want to slow down. So you need to understand that. The doctor's time, or any other medical provider's time, is limited. And they're going to provide the best service and the best care for patients that can afford their services. And they can either pay cash, or if they have insurance with a good carrier, they will take the insurance of the insurance company. They're going to check it out, make sure you are covered under an insurance plan with the insurance company, and they're going to file a claim, and they're going to be reimbursed at a much, much higher rate than what the government does, either under Medicaid or, for that matter, Medicare. And you need to understand that. This is a business. The doctors are not a charity, as well as other, I say doctors, there are other health providers, therapists, for example. So why they are qualified and do provide, with some exceptions, but generally provide excellent care, you have to pay for it. It's like anything else. You have to pay the price. I went shopping yesterday again. I needed a few items that I forgot to get. And it just reminds me, I did forget to get another item, so I might have to go back. But anyway, I shop, and I look for, especially if it's food, it has to be on sale. I'm trying to budget. I have a tight budget, and I make sure that I never buy any item for the full price. It has to be on sale. And I also shop at 3 grocery stores, because one provides, for example, I've said this before, cereal at a very competitive price versus the store that I usually go to, for example, Kroger. And there's also another grocery store literally across the street from where I live that I go to, and primarily for milk, bread, in Turkey. Now, why do I do that? And I'm not unusual. Americans believe in consumer sovereignty, believe that they're in the best position to know what their needs are, no matter what the good or service is, and they're looking for bargains. They look now. My time is valuable. I would love to be able to go to one grocery store once a week and shop and get all I need. The reality is, in today's world, most people have to shop, and they're looking for sales, they're looking for bargains, they're looking for a good deal. And that's what I do, just to provide food. Now, does that mean I'm sacrificing a certain amount of time to do that? You better believe it. That's why I said I'd love to just buy everything at one store. And see, people's situations change. When I was working full-time, usually 50 or 60 or 70 hours a week, I did not have time to shop. But I did was making a lot more money at that time, so what did I do? I didn't wait for the sale. I just bought what I need. I needed to get in and out. Now, when it comes to medical care, when we're talking somewhat big-ticket items, I definitely would shop. But that's not the way it works today. And see, here's the problem. The people that are on Medicaid, as well as the people that elect to go to the Veterans Administration, that's their choice. If they're eligible for veterans benefits, including access to a veterans hospital and their doctors, they're going to have to wait. And that's the problem. They are going to have to wait. Now, what's the danger? On some medical conditions, you can wait because they tend to be chronic. But you're going to have incidents or events that you can't wait. It's a medical emergency. Now, what many people do today, especially illegal aliens, if it's an emergency, where do they go? They go to the emergency room. And they really can't pay for it. They're here illegally. They go to the emergency room. And some veterans have to do that. Because if they go to the Veterans Administration, they're going to have to wait, even if it's an emergency, and might not even get taken care of. Ladies and gentlemen, I've listened to a lot of commentary, a lot of people calling about the current scandal at the VA. And the president had a statement today, and he's made similar statements when the scandals broke on Fast and Furious, when the scandals broke on Benghazi, when the scandal broke concerning the IRS going after Tea Party patriots, pro-life people, conservatives, and when the scandal broke about going after reporters, the AP, and listening to the telephone conversations. Now, the reaction to the White House, they have a protocol. First, the president comes out and says, "I am outraged. I first learned about it just like you did in the news. And I'm angry. I'm mad. And I'll get to the bottom of this and we'll have an investigation. And once the results of the investigation are in, I will take action." There's just one problem with that. Mr. President, you're in charge. You're the executive of this federal government. You have people reporting to you. They're called secretaries. In other companies, they would be called division heads that are responsible for their departments. And excuse me, Mr. President, I don't believe you. You knew about this. Because when you were in the Senate, you knew the problems of the Veterans Administration. When you were elected president, the transition team was briefed by the Bush administration that you need to be aware that you have problems in the Veterans Administration, especially in the area of the appointment areas, and games were being played by the bureaucrats across the country. So one, they could get bonuses by looking good. In other words, they had one system that was they kept two sets of books. One set of books was what they told their bosses in Washington, that we're really getting the waiting times down, the number of people on waiting lists are down. Meanwhile, when you call up, they put you on another list for an appointment. And you wait weeks, months, in some cases years, before you get a call back, if you ever get a call back. Usually you have to call again and again and again, And eventually, if you're lucky, you might get an appointment. Now, what's wrong with this system? It is not being responsive to the needs of their customers. And who are their customers? These are the people that serve their country, many of them in combat zones, in wars, where their life was in danger. They could have been killed, they could have been wounded, and many of them were wounded. And they had the reasonable expectation that the federal government, the United States of America, the federal government would take care of them, both when they were in the military and if as a result of their wounds they were disabled and couldn't go back to active duty. There always was the Veterans Administration that would take care of them. Now, we've had the Veterans Administration since World War II, and we've fought many wars since. The war in Korea, the career police action, which really was a war, Vietnam, Iraq, the first time, the second time, Afghanistan. There have been many places around the world where people of the armed forces, whether it's the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, have fought. Many have died, and many have been seriously wounded, where they lose their arms, their legs, they're blinded, and they also have psychological problems. So you have a lot of veterans of all these wars. Many of them are getting older and older. Most of the people that are in the baby boom generation fought in Vietnam. People that grew, that were in the early part of the baby boom generation might have fought in Iraq. These people are getting older. They're usually in their 50s or 60s. And as people get older, they have more medical problems. That's when you start to have heart attacks, strokes, cancer. There's a whole list of illnesses that really develop as you grow older. So there is going to be a tremendous demand on the services of both the hospital and the doctor of veterans. And Obama, and he makes no bones about this, he has dramatically increased the budget of the Veterans Administration. Ladies and gentlemen, the problem is not money. The problem is fundamentally you have a bureaucracy running hospitals and clinics, and that is simply not the function of the government. There are many outstanding run both private and nonprofit, many of them by churches. For example, I'm in Dallas. We have both the Presbyterian Hospital. We have Baylor has a number of systems in the area. They know how to run it, and they're efficient, and they serve the needs of their patients. Now, most of those patients are covered by insurance. Either they've bought the insurance themselves, or, like most people, approximately 155 million Americans obtain their health insurance as an employee benefit through their employer. That's a lot of people. So people, when they're working, typically get their coverage, and it's usually group coverage through their employer. And I would say 85 to 90% minimum are happy with that coverage. And if they use that coverage, whether they go to the Presbyterian Hospital or doctors associated with the Presbyterian Hospital or Baylor or other systems. There's competition out there. Kaiser, for example, there, and that is the American system. It's free market capitalism where you have to compete for patients in this case. And you compete on price, you compete on quality, and you also compete in how responsive you are. Now, that's the majority, the overwhelming majority of the American people. And if you ask any veteran, where would you like to be treated? Most of them will say, in my local community, in my neighborhood. They don't want to make a trip. And in some cases, it's not necessarily a long trip, but it's out of their neighborhood. It's not in their local community to either the VA, hospital, or a clinic. Because most of the privately run hospitals or the nonprofit church-related or other organizations, they serve a community. And most of the people that go to, whether it's Presbyterian or Medical City or Baylor Hospital or their networks, They live in that community. That's why they select that hospital and doctors, their primary care providers. That's what I did and do, and that's most people. The American people want choice, and that's what consumer sovereignty is about. They want a choice because they're in the best position to pick the doctor, the hospital, that they feel best serves their needs and wants and is affordable and is covered by their health insurance, whether they're buying the health insurance themselves or they get it as an employee benefit. Now, what surprises me in this discussion of the Veterans Administration, no one raises the basic question. And the basic question is it the role of the federal government to run a hospital system? I say absolutely not. Now, let me qualify it. And there is an exception, and that's why please listen to the first part of this show. I was in the military, as was my father. As a result, we always had excellent military care, and the government provided that care. Either at an Army hospital or an Air Force hospital, and when my parents retired, at a Navy hospital. However, the people on active duty had first priority, which is the way it should be. First, the ones that are actually in the military, and then their dependents, their children and their spouse. After that, if you were retired military, you were next. There was a priority, and that's the way it should be. If someone is wounded as a result of being injured, either wounded in war or wherever, they should have first priority. They shouldn't have to wait, and they don't wait because the care is generally excellent, of highest quality, it's timely, and that's what the American taxpayers expect for those that serve their country, whether it's the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, Coast Guard. Now, if you ask someone that's now a veteran, they either retired from the military service or they didn't retire. Some people become disabled, cannot continue on active duty, and pursue a career in the private sector. They're going to need, from the VA, and the government has set up a system to meet their medical needs. The problem is the system simply is overwhelmed. It's overwhelmed because it's not managed correctly. Fundamentally, what we have here is a management problem as well as who's managing it. The people that are managing this, it's not like a business. These are bureaucrats. They're government employees. Their incentives are different. Accountability is different. And that's why you have bureaucratic games where they'll have one set of books to make them look good to their bosses, either at the regional offices or at the headquarters in Washington. And then what they do is have a separate list for people that have called in and find out they can't get an appointment. And that's off the books. And that supposedly is what is being investigated right now. And the problem is many of those people that had the correct expectation that the Veterans Administration would provide them with medical care are dying. They're dying because they're not getting timely service. You see, ladies and gentlemen, the Veterans Administration is an excellent example of a single-payer system where the single payer is the government. And wherever you have a single-payer system where that's your only choice, you run into these problems. They can wait you out. You no longer are a problem when you're dead. You need timely medical service. And that's one of the problems of single payer, whether it's in Canada or in the United Kingdom or other countries. For the minor stuff, there's usually not a problem. It's only when you get older and are seriously ill do you find that you can't get that timely service. And see, that's what President Obama's for. He's for a single payer system. He's really not for Obamacare. There are a lot of problems with Obamacare, but that's not what the majority of the Democratic Party wanted for the American people. They were really trying to force you into a single-payer system such as the Veterans Administration, such as Medicaid. And the problem with both systems is you don't get timely care. It might make you feel good that, oh, I've qualified for Medicaid, or, oh, I have veterans benefits. But if you don't get the care when you need it, you don't really have care. You're being fooled. You're being misled, and you're really being lied to. Because what most people are expecting is care. When people buy insurance, it's not that they like to buy insurance, but they want the insurance to pay for care should the unlikely event occur that they have a heart attack or a stroke or cancer or whatever the catastrophic event is, because they know they simply do not have the economic resources to pay for it. That's why they seek out and buy voluntarily their own insurance. Individuals are in the best position to determine their needs and wants. They know their income. They know their family situation. They know their medical condition. And they also know what their other needs are. The trouble with single payer, it's one size fits all. It is really not the American way. It's a monopoly, folks. It's a government monopoly. That's what single payer is about. You don't have choices. You don't have an alternative. In other words, you're stuck. And that is what President Obama has repeatedly said prior to before he was running for president. I'm for a single-payer, universal health care system. In other words, I'm for a system where you don't have choices. You simply don't. You're stuck in a government-run system such as the Veterans Administration. And ladies and gentlemen, that is what they're worried about. The American people are quickly making the connection. This is where Obamacare is heading. And it is. This is exactly, the Veterans Administration is a prototype of what a single-payer system is. There's no competition. There's no three or four different Veterans Administration. Yeah, you have facilities across the country, but if you can't get an appointment or you can't get assigned to a primary care physician, and you don't really have a choice, they just assign you one. That's not what the American people are used to, and that's not what the American people want. The majority of the American people like the current system, where you decide what doctor you have. You decide what hospital you go to. And you decide what health insurance you buy. That's the American way. That's consumer sovereignty. It is not a system like Obamacare where they mandate, one, that you must buy a health insurance plan that the government has designed in conjunction with some of the largest insurance companies. Ladies and gentlemen, there was nothing wrong with the current system. I didn't say there's not room for an improvement. There always is room for improvement. But the overwhelming majority of people, the 155 million people, include and an additional 20 million that actually buy individual coverage, the overwhelming majority of those people were satisfied with their health insurance. And it met their needs, and it was affordable. Was there room for improvement? You better believe it, because medical costs are one of the fast rising costs, and one of the areas of improvement besides affordability is portability. Because the problem with group insurance, it's your employer that decides what plan you have. Most people, including me, would rather they go out on their own and decide which health insurance plan they have. Now, the reason why we have over 155 million people under group insurance, and there's a history to it that I don't have time to get into, is there is a tax deduction. There's a tax advantage for the employer to provide. It's a deductible expense. Compare that with the individual where it's not. And that's just one simple change. They should make it deductible for the individual, just like a business, for the premiums you pay for health insurance. Point one. You also should have, it should be portable. And if it's an individual plan, it is. You own it. Just like if I move to another part of Dallas or Texas or move even out of state, I keep my insurance. My premiums might go up or down. So I can keep my own carrier. And that's what most people, in particular, when you're talking health insurance, want. They want to keep it So they're not locked into an employer. See, one of the problems or disadvantages of a group system is many people stay working for the same company, not because they like it there, but because they have good health insurance. So they get trapped, and they're afraid, and it's a legitimate fear, that if they leave that company, they might not be able to afford, in many cases they can't, individual health care. Now, what I'm highlighting is what should be done, and it's a very easy solution. Actually, there are two parts to it. One, from here on out, all the veterans should be getting a voucher from the federal government to go buy their own health insurance. It could be a catastrophic plan. It could be money that they could put in their health savings account, but they should be getting that. Whatever that, I have no idea what the dollar value would be. Now, what's the advantage of that? One, you immediately have competition, and it's the individual veteran that decides what's the best use of that money. Where can I get the best deal in terms of health insurance that enables me to see the doctor in the hospital that I want to be serviced? So I don't have to go to a VA hospital or clinic. I go where I want, and I can add to it. While the government can provide me a basic minimum voucher, I can add money to it. The other thing that needs to be happen is the VA needs to be privatized, where you have competition in the Veterans Administration's system, where you transition it from a government-run organization, which it is today, to a privately run organization. And that could be, for example, let's say in Dallas, you have Presbyterian, you have Medical City, you have Baylor. They could bid and take over some or all, for example, in Dallas, of the Veterans Administration. So you have economic incentives to serve the veteran well. Because people will, when you have competition, they will respond to consumer complaints. I've just got the signal that I need to wrap it up. I thank you for listening. I might have a little more to say tomorrow on it, but that's my idea, and it's not unique to me. The late famous economist Milton Friedman, and I need to say this because I forgot. If you go to my companion blog, pronkpops.wordpress.com, that's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com, you'll have links to both the last 60 shows at the top and all my shows at the bottom, but in between you'll have videos. And one of the videos is of Milton Friedman going over what are the legitimate functions of the government. And what he recommended many years ago is pay the veterans off. They've earned the benefit, pay them off, and let them decide what was best for them. And that's what I'm recommending. You've been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening, and now my closing music. Have a great day.